We've been in the book of Exodus now for about 15 months, but this week we're finished. There were a few verses that we missed here and there. Look for more on those in roundup style messages down the road, and also in conjunction with other principles that we'll study in more depth later. But as for the bulk of the book, this is it. Today we'll be considering Exodus chapter 39, verses 32 through chapter 40, verse 38, in which Moses will finally erect the tabernacle. In addition to studying the text, we'll take the opportunity to recap the book of Exodus and to take care of some housekeeping items. So, if you have not read Exodus 39:32 through the end of the book, I recommend that you do so now. Before we dig into the passage itself, let's set the stage by making a brief review of events thus far. Genesis was the prelude to Exodus. In that book, God created the world, but there was a problem. Sin entered the world. It's still the primary problem for you and me today, but the primary theme of the Bible is the resolution of that problem. When sin reached a fever pitch in Genesis, God sent a flood to wipe the earth clean, but the problem still reared its ugly head. In response to that, God chose a man, Abraham, and promised him that he would bless the world through his descendants, descendants whom he also promised would inhabit the land of Canaan. Those descendants are the people of Israel, and, through an unlikely series of events, they became slaves in the land of Egypt. And that's where Exodus kicked in. In the opening pages of this book, we were introduced to Moses, the son of an Israelite slave who was divinely protected from the murderous reign of Pharaoh. Moses was rescued by the princess who raised him in the Egyptian high life. But Moses could not turn from his Hebrew roots, and when he saw one of the Egyptian masters beating a Hebrew slave, he killed the Egyptian and was forced to flee for Midian. While he was away, Moses encountered Jehovah, the God of the universe, who told him that he must return to Egypt and demand of Pharaoh that the people of Israel be released from their bondage. Moses was reluctant, but armed with God's miraculous signs and aided by his brother Aaron, Moses returned to Egypt and demanded freedom for his people. When Pharaoh refused to let the people go, God sent plagues on Egypt, ravaging the land and ultimately forcing Pharaoh to release Israel. Worst among those plagues, of course, was the plague of death on the firstborn, a plague from which the Israelites were protected by the blood of a lamb. That lamb, we know, served as a foreshadow of the ultimate solution to the long-standing sin problem, that Jesus, the Lamb of God, would die for the sins of his people. With the deaths of the firstborn, Moses and the Israelites were set free. But while they were fleeing, Pharaoh had a change of heart and chased them to the sea, where God intervened, splitting the sea so that Israel could escape on dry ground, and then crashing the sea back down, drowning Pharaoh's army. Thereafter, the people of Israel traveled to Mount Sinai, where God revealed his moral laws, represented by the Ten Commandments. The people covenanted with him to obey those laws, and God promised in return to give them the promised land of Canaan. But the Israelites violated the covenant as soon as the terms were written out, creating for themselves a golden calf which they worshipped as a god. For this, thousands of Israelites died, but ultimately God forgave the rebellious people and renewed his covenant. Moses descended the mountain with the Ten Commandments chiseled in stone, and the people built a great portable temple, the tabernacle, to house them. And that is where today's narrative picks up. It is a very simple narrative. At the end of chapter 39, we read that the people of Israel completed the work of building the tabernacle, and much of the passage is devoted to listing off the things that were completed. The account of exactly what was made is very thorough, demonstrating a desire on the part of Moses to follow God's instructions exactly. In verse 42, Moses observes that the work has been done just as it was ordered, and he blesses the people. In chapter 40, God gives instructions for the assembly of the tabernacle, and those instructions were followed precisely. First, the tent was raised, then the ark was put into the most holy place, the veil was hanged, the furnishings were brought into the holy place, the outer curtain was hanged, and then the outer court and its furnishings were assembled. God also commanded that the priests be consecrated. We know, of course, that consecration isn't recorded until a few chapters later in Leviticus, but evidently it was performed at this same time. So on the first day of the second year, commemorating the first anniversary of Israel's departure from Egypt, the tabernacle was finally constructed. And thereafter, Jehovah's cloud theophany covered the tabernacle, and his glory filled it in the sight of all the people. In the closing verses of the book of Exodus, we read a note about what Israel's journey will look like moving forward. They will follow the cloud through the wilderness. When it rises, the people will rise and follow it. When it descends, the people will stop and set up camp. In this way, God will ultimately lead them to the promised land. Now there is one little stickling point that I want to mention before we conclude our discussion of Exodus, and that is the confusion about the term tabernacle versus the tent of meeting. In this chapter, and at other places throughout the OT, we see the tabernacle referred to as the tent of meeting. We mentioned the term tent of meeting previously, just 2 weeks ago, on August 19th, 2018, when we were studying Exodus chapter 33. There, I concluded, based on the immediate context, that this tent was a different structure from the tabernacle, which obviously had not been constructed at that point in the narrative. And that gives us a question. Why are these both called the tent of meeting? Were these two tents one and the same? I say no, but I will admit that there is a possibility I'm wrong here. We cannot completely rule out the possibility that the narrative portion of chapter 33 is not in chronological order, and it is possible that it described Moses meeting with God after the tabernacle was built, explaining why the tabernacle is also called the tent of meeting here. Maybe they are both the same tent. However, it seems clear that Moses was meeting God somewhere other than on Mount Sinai during the period immediately following the golden calf incident, and the tabernacle was not yet built at that time. Now, hypothetically, God could have met with and talked to Moses anywhere, but it appears that he was meeting Moses at a tent of meeting, which was not the tabernacle. And as I noted before, the Hebrew word most commonly used to describe the tabernacle, mishkan, is not used in that passage. So on those grounds, it seems most likely to me that there were two tents, one temporary and one permanent, and that the temporary tent was called the tent of meeting until this tabernacle was constructed, at which point it took on the tent of meeting name. As is always the case in such matters, I suppose you're free to disagree with me, and I don't think your faith will be hindered in the least if you do. And with that, we officially conclude our discussion of the book of Exodus, and we move on to some housekeeping items. Obviously, looking forward, we'll be going on to the immediate next book of the Bible, which is Leviticus, but before we do that, we're going to take a short break from going directly through the Bible. As we did after Genesis, I plan to devote three messages in between books to some relevant psalms. There are 147 psalms that we have not yet studied, and if we don't break those up and put them in between books, at some point we'd be looking at about three straight years of messages on nothing but psalms, and that would be pretty difficult to sit through, particularly for a person like myself who appreciates prose much more than poetry. I'm also planning to do at least one special message in between books focusing on certain aspects of the law, and we'll plan to do at least one roundup of things in Exodus that we missed. We might also have a topical message that surveys a number of valuable scriptures, but doesn't focus on only one specific passage. But I won't spoil the surprise by telling you which topics I'm going to speak on. In any case, if you're just dying to get into Leviticus, you're going to have to pray for some patience. My expectation is that it will take about 6 weeks for us to get there, and seeing that it is already September, something which I find hard to believe anytime I think of it, it isn't at all unreasonable to believe that we won't jump into Leviticus until mid-October. And furthermore, for those of you who are excited about Leviticus, you're going to want to become a member at East Jordan. Leviticus is a dry, difficult read. It is slow, tedious, and for most people, not particularly interesting. And not unlike the tabernacle, much of the book is only of passing importance, and has little direct impact on a modern believer's faith, particularly for those who are still inexperienced in study of the scriptures. I've often said of people attempting to read through the Bible that Leviticus separates the men from the boys. It isn't easy to get through. So, for those reasons, much of Leviticus, and particularly the opening, will be reserved for members only. So if you show up bright and early in mid-October looking for lessons on animal sacrifices, and you aren't a member at East Jordan, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Becoming a member at East Jordan is not difficult. The first step is to create an account. Then, while logged in with your account, you need to meet a few criteria. You have to listen to at least 25 messages and correctly answer their quiz questions. And you also have to pass a couple of courses, starting with Soteriology 1 on the orange courses page. Once you've shown that basic level of commitment, a membership application will appear in the library, and you can apply to join. An elder like myself will carry you the rest of the way. Now, that might sound like a lot, and maybe it is, but we want to ensure that our members are receiving a firm foundation in the faith before we graduate them to advanced material. East Jordan may be an online community, but we want being a member here to mean something, so we have standards. And please, if you have any trouble at all with those instructions, I would love to get a message from you so that we can communicate about walking you through the process step by step. I'm in ministry so that I can help people, and hearing from people is something that I love. So feel free to ask questions. The next housekeeping topic I want to address is financial offerings. I try to keep begging for money to a bare minimum around here, and so I only ever make requests for donations at the end of a lengthy book study. And I'll tell you one thing right up front. We don't even accept donations from non-members. If you aren't a full-blown member at East Jordan, there isn't any way for you to give money. You won't find any way to make a donation on the site, and if you did find a way, we wouldn't accept it. If you aren't a member, we're here to serve you, not to take your money. And I am glad to serve here without any financial reward. Teaching the Word is its own reward for me. But for those of you who are simply interested in being generous, there are financial needs here, even if they are relatively low costs, which we can manage without your contributions. There is a cost to keeping the website up and running, and we pay for software that we use to make a variety of changes and updates. At the moment, it would also be very helpful if I could invest some money in more recording equipment. But most of all, money contributed to this project can buy time. Currently, I make no money running East Jordan Church, and as a result, I work full-time to support myself and my family. As long as I work full-time, I can only devote part-time effort to East Jordan. Writing sermons, developing course materials, contributing to new features on the site, making recordings, and all the other things I do here take a considerable amount of time. And so without a larger budget, we're limited in what features and content we can make available to you. So, if you're a member and you believe that East Jordan is providing something valuable, the way for you to get more of that faster is to invest some money. But I will say again, as I have said before, you don't owe East Jordan anything. We don't demand a tithe, and we want you to put your money toward those causes which you think are most beneficial for the growth of God's kingdom. If that means you pour money into your family or your neighbor before you pour money into me, go for it. But in speaking of the benefit to God's kingdom, I want to take a moment to highlight the value of the work that we're doing here at East Jordan. We have some incredible power here that traditional brick and mortar churches just don't have. In the old days, people attending a church had access to one sermon a week, and if they wanted it, they had to get up, put on their best clothes, and physically appear in a church building. And if they couldn't be there at the right place and the right time, well, too bad. They'd miss out on learning the scriptures until next week. In teaching one message a week, the pastor could never adequately teach the whole of the scriptures. They could not dig deep into every little issue, and in fact, due to time constraints, they would often skip over entire passages or even entire books in the interest of covering the material, which was the most important. There are entire books of the Bible which are rarely, if ever, preached in person. In a brick-and-mortar church today, a sermon series on the book of Exodus, if it was particularly thorough, might include the story of Moses in the basket, the story of God revealing himself to Moses, the story of the plagues, a message on each of the Ten Commandments, and maybe a message on the significance of the Passover, if you're lucky. That would be over in about 3 months, and if you missed it, you wouldn't have an opportunity to hear anything about the book of Exodus for several more years, if your pastor ever got back around to it at all. This, of course, highlights the responsibility that individual Christians have to study the Word on their own. If you're eager to learn the Bible, you can't just wait around for others to teach you. Even with the power of East Jordan, we can't ever be expected to guide you the way that the Holy Spirit can. But that aside, the fact is that we can do better at East Jordan than a brick and mortar can do. Because of our unique format, we've been able to really dig deep into the book of Exodus. We've been able to go verse by verse, skipping less than a chapter's worth of verses through the whole book. We've been able to devote as much attention to any passage as that passage needs. I doubt you'll find another church anywhere that can offer you a 2-month sermon series on the construction of the tabernacle alone. And we're able to do all that because when we teach the Word, the teaching sticks around for our listeners to access at any time. It has taken us over a year to work our way through the book of Exodus, but now that we have the messages, they'll be available for as long as East Jordan is running. As of right now, we've got messages covering about 10% of all the verses in the Bible. You heard that right. We've gone through the first two books, but with all the supplemental passages we've considered, we're through roughly 10% of every single verse in the book. So if you've never listened to a message here before, you could start listening with just one message every day, and in 4 months, you would know the first 10% of the Bible better than your grandmother, who spent 50 years in a church pew. In the time that we can conveniently and thoroughly teach you a full 10% of the Bible, the brick-and-mortar pastor can give you little more than an inconvenient, rough overview of one book. And the convenience and reach of East Jordan make us an ideal format for spreading the word. You don't have to listen in your Sunday best on Sunday morning. You can listen in your car on the way to work. And since the sermons are almost always between 15 and 25 minutes long, you can expect them to finish in that time as well. And East Jordan is reaching the entire world. Most of our hits come from the United States, but we get visitors to our website from Canada, the UK, Australia, and even as far away as China. In an ordinary month, we get over 1,000 visitors. That's a number that I'm sure we can grow if funds can be put toward evangelism and advertising efforts. So I hope that you'll stick with East Jordan and help us grow in this ministry. I think it is well worth your time and your resources. So then, this week we have finished the book of Exodus, taking the opportunity to reset the stage with a broad review of the Bible's story thus far, and we've also cleaned up the housekeeping. I thank you for listening, and I hope that you'll be back next week as we jump into some messages between the books before we move on to Leviticus. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.